Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. A big weekend, although I had hoped it would feel a lot bigger than it actually feels, at least at this moment, Les, because, you know, when AEW just announced that there would be a joint show with New Japan on pay-per-view this first full official weekend of summer, without a card, I thought to myself, I'm buying that bad boy. And when they made the original match, or it looked like it was going to be CM Punk versus Hiroshi Tanahashi, I was thrilled to be throwing my money at Tony Khan and company. And I'm still, or was still happy a few of the week after that, looking at Jon Moxley and Hiroshi Tanahashi. But now we've had several weeks of what you would, I guess they would call build for this pay-per-view. And I am so much less excited for this show than I was when there was no card announced. And I'm not sure how exactly that works. But before, and I know you have a lot to say about this week's Dynamite, and we'll take a look at some of the big matches that are set up for this pay-per-view, which should still be really damn good. But I think we really do have to talk about, now that I've gotten that part of AEW off my chest, and I feel much better, we still have to get to WWE stuff first with Vince McMahon's multiple appearances on TV since the last time you and I got together. And Triple H returning to the Performance Center, the return of Brock Lesnar as well. But first, some folks who had spent plenty of time in the wrestling business and a lot of time in WWE, unfortunately, have passed away in the past week. Tim White, longtime WWE referee and official, and a guy who spent a lot of time going up and down the road with Andre the Giant, passed away last week, as did Dave Hebner, who I know you knew pretty well.
Yeah, Tim White, I knew Tim, but I didn't know him well. I never had the opportunity to work around him. But from all indications from everybody, he was a hell of a guy as well. And like you say, he took care of Andre, so he gets my vote there. And, of course, we want to send our condolences out to his family and friends. And, you know, again, a hell of a referee. And those are hard to come by. Believe me, you watch AEW, mentioned. Yes, so great, yes. Great referees are hard to come. Some that can actually count to 10 or 5 are hard to come by. I'm being facetious here this morning, aren't I? Anyway, but yeah, Dave Hebner and I go way back. We were buddies. And before, you know, the Hebners, David and Earl, lived in Richmond, Virginia. And actually, first indication, they weren't referees. They were just the twins that helped Joe Murnick, who was the Joe and Elliot and Carl, his two sons, promoted Norfolk, Richmond, Raleigh, excuse me, and several spot towns as well. And so David, you know, the Hebners were just like nice kids that were errand boys for Joe. You know, they ran errands for him and helped him, you know, put out posters and so forth and so on. And then developed into where they both became damn good referees. And Dave and I, when Crockett, Flair, and Mulligan bought Knoxville from Barnett, they brought Dave came in as our lead referee for that promotion. And he moved into into the complex where I lived. And he and his wife and my girlfriend and I played board games together and stuff. And got, you know, but yeah, I was close to Dave. I am, you know, I don't see Earl, obviously, but when we can get together, we spend time together. But Dave was a hell of a referee. And of course, the wild thing with the whole, you know, Montreal screw job and that sort of thing, is by the boards. He was doing what he was paid to do and so forth and so on. But those guys were, you know, they contributed so much to the business, more than just as the referees, but, you know, beforehand as well. And, wow, David, they will be missed. He really will. He, like I say, great referees in this day and age are a short supply. I can name you six real quick off the top of my head from bygone eras, and I don't know about naming you. Maybe Charles Robinson is still at it. And anyway, David's gone, and he's no more suffering. And you know, he the Parkinson just ate him up. And I saw the picture, you know, the last picture they put up, and it was, you know, it brought tears to my eyes. But obviously, my condolences go out to his wife and family, and his son, and you know, his and of course Earl. And damn, if heavens hadn't gotten a couple of the top flight referees this past week, and may they rest in peace.
Well, that's for sure. And of course, if you listen to any of the shows on this site with any regularity, you either remember well or have heard the stories this week about one of the most famous angles in wrestling history in the late 80s with Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Ted DiBiase, and both Dave and Earl Hebner trying to pass off the twin referee gimmick, where there was some crooked stuff going on to enable Andre the Giant to win the championship from Hogan and present it as a gift to his benefactor, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man. And around that same time in the WWE, because yes, it really has been that long, Bruce Pritchard was working in the company for his first go-round. And it looks like he's gotten himself at least a temporary promotion with everything going on between Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis that we've detailed at length last week. And there's more on that, by the way, in this week's Observer at F4WOnline.com. Bruce, not only with the duties he currently has as executive producer of both Raw and SmackDown, has now been named interim head of talent relations, according to Dave's reporting, much to the abject horror of the talent roster for the most part. And I have to tell you, when you're looking at this, and it, you know, you don't have to be Karnak to figure this out. By the way, kids, Google Karnak. It was a pretty good gimmick.
You know, Dave is really bad about us bringing up history.
I know that's bad, but
yeah, but Dave, you'll live through it, because we love history and loathe most of the current crap. So go ahead.
I was just saying, I think it's quite possible Bruce ends up having to absorb these duties, because if something's going to happen, if there's going to be a slap on the wrist somewhere, and while it's possible for Vince to be forced out, at least at this moment, it appears highly unlikely. If anyone's going to take a fall here, it's more likely to be John Laurinaitis. So I imagine there's a better than average shot that Bruce Pritchard has of having to absorb this head of talent relations position as well, Les.
Yes, I would think so. Well, you know, and listen, you know, Bruce's brother, Tommy, and I are, we're like, you know, we're tight. One of my dearest friends in this business, trusted with my life. I get along with Bruce, but Bruce is a company man. There is no two ways about it. One of the minuses in for me with Bruce is, he loves Funny Kid, which means, you know, Brother Love reincarnated 16 times. And so you see a lot of this stuff that you shake your head at on WWE. I'm going to say that I'm going to pretty much believe that part of that, or a percentage of that, is coming from Bruce's idea. But Bruce is a company man. So whatever comes, whatever he spews to you, you can pretty much think that a guy named Vincent Kennedy McMahon put in his head. So, yeah. But, you know, that's the other thing, too. Everybody's worried about changes and this and that. And I don't know, you know, Nick is the guy that I guess is the puppet master at this point. But Stephanie in the CEO seat, Bruce, talent relations. I think Vince still got a hold on that company. I'm not real sure.
Oh, well, I think it's even more apparent after not only appearing on SmackDown, but Raw as well. I know there were some folks, and we held out a little bit of a small percentage of hope last week when we saw the news and Stephanie being named interim head of the company, interim chairwoman. The idea that maybe there would be an opportunity to do some things at least a little bit differently. And I recall that the last time Bruce Pritchard had worked in this company prior to this go-around, he had been let go by Stephanie McMahon directly. And Vince, who obviously loves having Bruce Pritchard around, did not interfere in that. And I didn't think that Stephanie was necessarily going to cut Bruce and go on some sort of rampage or anything like that. But last Friday, before we saw what we've seen over the last week or so, you thought maybe there was a chance some things could be done a little bit differently. But after watching these appearances from Vince on SmackDown and on Raw, and as we talked about last week, retaining all creative control on what's happening on these television shows, at least for me, Les, after watching these past few days worth of television, we're kidding ourselves if we think Stephanie or Bruce or anybody else is making any decisions here on a day-to-day basis. I think we're also now kidding ourselves and can stop talking about selling this company, because I think these appearances served multiple purposes for Vince. Number one, he was testing the waters. He wanted to know what the reaction would be like. And if he got booed on Friday, he would not have been on TV Monday. But now that he, you know, he was emboldened by what happened on SmackDown, so he showed up again on Raw. And I think that we're kidding ourselves if you think anything other than the board or somebody else convincing Vince to sell. No, they're going to have to pry this company from his cold, dead hands. He is every bit still the CEO and in charge of everything going on, no matter what they tell you. And to me, that second appearance, both of them really, were about showing the stockholders that this is not going to go sideways. I'm still here and I'm still running things, wink, wink. But I also think it was a bit of a middle finger to the board, especially Monday's appearance. And it wasn't that he said or did anything untoward. He basically did nothing in either appearance. But the point is, the message went to the board after he got that incredible reception on Friday. Yeah, you can do whatever you want. You can find whatever you find. It doesn't matter. I'm here and I'm not going anywhere.
I wouldn't disagree with you. I really wouldn't. And you're right. Well, especially Monday when he came out on Raw. And I thought after, and I thought, that's all you're going to say. What it scared me is he almost fell down the damn steps. That's, he's, Vince is balancing. Listen, I'm older than Vince. And I understand my balance is not good. And if I'm going up ring steps or something, I'm careful. But yeah, I thought he was going to fall coming down. Then he jumped. The rest of it, I thought, oh, my God, I hope the camera's not on that, because if he takes a bump, I don't want to see it. I wouldn't want to embarrass him. But, yeah, the walk out there and the walk back was more meaningful than what he said.
Agreed.
I'm thinking if he comes out on SmackDown tonight and says, hey, I just want to let you folks know we got a special on Theory's t-shirts tonight, two for the price of one, and then walks out. That wouldn't surprise me either. I mean, it's like, why are you out there? And it just, yeah. But I think you're probably right. He's shooting the bird. And at the five law firms now that are investigating this?
Seven, I believe.
Seven. Oh, wow.
They're adding them by the day.
They may end up with more law firms than Tony Khan has talent.
Man.
No, I mean, that's impossible.
But they are lining up, and it really all is dependent upon the stock price. I mean, if the stock continues to plummet, and the market's generally turning in the wrong direction right now, so I can't say I attribute the stock losses this week to anything that's been going on in the news with them so much as just a general malaise in the market this year for obvious reasons that we've all been talking about off the airwaves forever. But if it does continue to go down, they do have at least a little bit of grounds for these class action suits that I'm sure they're all trying to lay the groundwork for. But that's not going to be an easy answer, at least not until the board comes out with some more. And unless they find some more that's actually a lot more damning than what we've heard so far, I'm not sure that's going to go anywhere. But it does show that people are watching. And I think that's even more of why Vince felt emboldened by the reception he got on Friday and made it a point to be there Monday.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know how, you know, I was wondering too on what the reaction would have been last Friday. And I won't say I was surprised that wrestling fans or people in general in this day and age, although they may do something I didn't expect, I don't know that anything surprises me anymore. But yeah, they were into it, right? And I think they look at it like, damn, Vince's got a lot of moxie, doesn't he? I mean, he's, I think a lot of the fans are thinking he's shooting the bird, right, to the stockholders or the legal firms or whoever. This is going to be drawn out. I mean, if you got that many law firms working at this, I'm sure they're not in concert where they're all going to come up with their findings at the same time. And my God, if they start doing hearings on that, it could rival January the 6th stuff, huh?
Well, you know what? If they were ever to start doing something like that where it was anything close to a matter of public record, you may see a lot of people come out of the woodwork to offer some commentary on that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. And come to think of it, Vince and Donald are buddies.
That's true.
And I have no problem saying I'm Vince's buddy. I'm the other guy, he's not my friend.
Well,
anyway,
he's got your address, though.
Yeah, he does, right. I've got mail from Donald. Oh, well, whatever. He just wanted to let me know he was a lot smarter about wrestling than I was.
Mm-hmm.
But then everybody is this day and age, right? I get called out by 13-year-old kids. What the hell? But no, I don't know where all this is going to go. But you're right. And even if the economy, I think we're good now, all this is going to affect their stock to some degree. I am not an expert at the stock market by any stretch of the imagination. But I would assume that any disruption in a major corporation that people, you know, that are publicly held, creates problems, and some people are getting out early even before they even know what they're getting out for, don't you think?
I think so, and that's part of the reason I think Vince wanted to at least test the waters on Friday and why he felt good about coming back on Monday and may come back even more often if the stock market is not favorable to them. Again, I don't know that, you know, this week's retreat on the market had much to do with what happened this week. But if we learn more, then what happens from here could have an effect on that. And so I guess he wants to just make sure everyone knows he's around in some kind of effort to show the stockholders no need to abandon ship. The guy who built this thing is still around, and I'm going to be here.
And one thing, you know, it hasn't gotten a lot of press, I guess, because it was settled too quickly, was his deal with Luck. On the XFL.
Well, you know,
thing.
We talked about that last week. Like, it was insanity for him to walk away from that initial settlement conversation knowing what was coming. And that's the thing. It's one thing, you know, if he was blindsided by it, but he knew that was coming and he still chose to do that with all this news breaking at the same time. I imagine it didn't take more than about 15 seconds for his lawyers to get in his ear and say, brother, just settle this and move on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you don't need the thing with the stockholders is bad enough. You don't need the other thing, plus you're just stacking stuff on top of it. So, yeah, it's best for him. That's obvious, I think. And, of course, I think so many people are wondering, is it going to come out? Somebody said to me, how many women has he paid to keep quiet? I said, what are you asking me for? I don't know. How many women he's paid to keep quiet? One we're aware of, right? $3 million or whatever.
Yes, but and apparently, based on what the board has, it's safe to assume there's more than one. But, you know, they're NDAs for a reason. So who knows whether or not we'll learn anything more about that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, wow, you know, and talking about the trickle-down effect, what happens with Johnny Ace's marriage and Vince's too. I think with Vince and Linda, I'm saying this without any idea or no one's told me this or anything, but I get the feeling theirs is a business arrangement at this point, you think?
An understanding.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I don't think that's an unfair conclusion to draw, but yeah, I mean, we're just spitballing on that.
And at their, you know, and of course, a divorce at their age, I mean, you get a divorce at any age, it's not like there's a limit, but they're both probably better off financially married than they would be single.
Well, I'll
and
give
I
you,
know that probably.
I'll give you an example of it being cost prohibitive, and it has to do with music, has nothing to do with divorce. Ed Sheeran just won a lawsuit in the last week or so. One of his songs, there was two guys who had written another song that claimed Ed Sheeran's, one of his bigger hits, Shape of You, was a direct ripoff of their song. And so Ed not only had to be a part of this whole proceedings and go to court, but he had to testify. He had to, you know, get on the stand and do all sorts of things refuting this and, you know, basically showing his work with respect to the song. And in the end, these guys who sued him, their claims by the judge were found to have no merit. And not only did Ed Sheeran win this lawsuit saying that he did not rip this song off or their song off, He was awarded $1.1 million in damages. So here's the kicker when I say it's cost prohibitive no matter how you split these assets. Ed Sheeran was sued. He proved his case. He won. They gave him $1.1 million in damages, and it didn't cover his legal fees.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Wow. Yes. Well, and like you're saying, we're talking about Linda and Vince McMahon. Vince already has a staff of lawyers in the office.
True.
And she's going to get at least one high-powered lawyer who's going to have how many second chairs behind him. And I mean, she's not going to go to a public defender. That's for damn sure. So, yeah. So just the billable hours for both sides of lawyers could amount to how many billions of dollars, right? That's, yeah, it's cost prohibitive. You're right, I would think. And like I say, at their ages, and when I say this, I'm not saying it like I think I know for sure or anything, but I think that couples in this position, you know, will tend to do that. We'll say, hey, you know, we live under the same roof, you know, we have separate, I mean, I know people who have separate bedrooms and have maintained their marriage or, you know, because it costs more not to.
Yeah. And if you've got that much money, separate homes.
Lord, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure their house is big enough that they can one stay on one side, one on the other and never see each other.
Never run into each other. You're right.
That is, yeah, true. But can't imagine how many bedrooms and bathrooms that place has got. But, and again, all the behind the scenes chicanery and drama is more entertaining than what's going on the TV shows.
Well,
right?
The WWE drama behind the scenes took a turn to Orlando this week when Triple H returned for some business meetings, apparently declared to people at the Performance Center he was back. And when they asked back for what, he said, I can't tell you. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you stopping by.
The CIA strikes again. It's maybe he's back for the legal people, maybe the stockholders have bought Triple H out and he's a double agent now or something.
Oh, he's their mole in Orlando.
I don't know. It's crazy. I mean, it truly is. It truly is. But you know, I mentioned my friend Jim, and let me say, you know, I pay attention. I ask anybody that's not in the wrestling business that comes and sits and watches wrestling with me. I said, don't say what you think I want to hear. Don't say something's good because that's my background wrestling. I want to hear I want to hear what you think as a fan, you know, as a person watching. And Jim has said this just off the cuff a couple times to me. But Monday night, now he has been skipping Monday nights at my house for Raw. But he came over this past Monday. And the thing of it, he said, how many times do I get to see the Usos and whoever, right? What was the not Street Profits, but yeah.
Yeah, it was the Street Profits this week, wasn't it?
Yeah. He said, how many times? But he said, Les, virtually every match on this, I've seen how many times? How many times are we going to see Sheamus and McIntyre? How many times are we going to see this? And I'll tell you what, the opening, I had said to you that SmackDown, when Pat and Michael did the stand-up, the old school stand-up opening, I think, great, you're going back to that. But when the women started coming out, five of them, then they make a match, you know, and there's not a hot promo in the bunch, and they're trying to fill in all this. And you know what? I'm going to say this, and it really has nothing to do with what I'm about, but a couple of years ago, I have said to a couple, I may have said it to you, with the man, I said, Becky is a very attractive lady. She's a pretty lady, but she doesn't come out and try to sell that. She comes out to sell herself as an athlete. Well, that's changed. her space cadet costume she had on with the layered shoulder pads. And I thought, but you know, that's the other thing too. And Asuka, is there such a thing as racial, whatever you call it when you make, I mean, she doesn't do anything for the Japanese society or,
you know,
their
more,
background, does she?
More and more people have been talking about the way they've asked her to present herself on this show. And it's funny to me because, well, it's not funny, but I mean, she wasn't presented anywhere near like that in NXT, but she's been basically presented in the same fashion in WWE, the main roster, since day one. And so I'm a little bemused at the idea that now all of a sudden people are in a bit of an uproar about it, but it is getting a little more traction around wrestling circles, at least, folks noticing how this is going. And maybe it's because she's gotten a little more of an opportunity to speak, and you don't know whether or not they're putting her up to speaking in the manner she is, or if it's just, hey, listen, you know, English is not the first language of a lot of people, but the overall presentation of her has been, I think, questionable as a character since she debuted on the main roster. But it's interesting to me that only now have people really started talking about it a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, you know, I said a long while back to you, and I said it probably get heat for me, and nobody sent me any bomb letters or anything. So far, so good. I'll venture there again. But I said to Jim, as these women are coming out one by one, and they're all, and I said, does anybody in that ring appear to be a female athlete to you? Or does this look like Halloween trick or treat? And listen, I'm not, I'm 81 years old, be 82 in October. Let me tell you, I have no problem looking at beautiful women or sexy women. I don't. But I would like them to actually look like athletes too. And I don't see it, you know. Again, it's not that they look bad, but do they look like they're ready to kick somebody's ass? No. The other thing that my friend Jim called my attention to, it was so bad that in that women's multi, where, God, this whole week is multi-human being matches, and you know how much I love those, just like I love the plague. Anyway, he said, where the hell is the other three women? Or the other two or what? I said, they're waiting. They're out overselling on the floor. But it was so friggin' obvious. And that is the choreographed nonsense that I can't deal with. Is, okay, there's four of us or there's five, whatever it happens to be. And three of us or two of us are going to go outside and oversell something that doesn't even deserve to be sold for a minute. So these two can get their shit in the ring. Then these two, they're going to come in and we're going to throw them out and do this and then two more, you know. And that's why I don't like those matches. I don't. But yeah, the overall thing on Monday night was with Jim. He said, now are you happy? I came and watched all the matches I've seen five or six or seven times already. And again, where I wish Tony Khan, where he's got 7,000 people on his roster, or he borrows enough to have that many, you know, he's throwing Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving and Easter all out, giving us all those holidays at the same time by putting all these stars in these multi. It's not necessary. How many good shows could you get out if you separate them and spread them out a little bit?
Well, I was going to say to you, if you like choreographed stuff with multiple person matches and people overselling on the floor, I've got a hell of a show for you this weekend.
Well, I can't wait.
AEW and New Japan's Forbidden Door this weekend. Make no mistake, I still think the top matches are going to be worth your time. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't.
If you think Osprey and Orange Clown.
I said the top matches.
Okay, well, that's going to end up being one of them, I bet you.
Oh, don't say that. But it is for the IWGP United States Championship, so I guess it is a top match.
Thanks. I'm excited then. Okay.
Well, listen, we got our first look in America at Will Ospreay over the past week on major American television, I should say. He did the tag match last week on Rampage, in addition to a terrific match with Dax last week. And then they do this for the IWGP Championship with Orange Cassidy, that U.S. title on the line. We'll get to our partial predictions for Forbidden Door. Not going to go through the entire card because I don't think time permits, to be perfectly honest with you. But we're going
to
talk
about that we'll be able to stay awake that long.
But we will discuss the lion's share of the matches and tell you who we think is going to end up getting their hand raised here in another, 60, 90 seconds. But I did want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit more about Dynamite, because I feel like it was much the same as we've gotten in the last few weeks. You know, you've got an embarrassment of riches between these two companies that are honestly quite rich in talent. And unfortunately, like you said, you're throwing so many people together on these cards that very few matches are going to have a chance to really put that on display for you and flesh it out.
Yes, I listened to Simp and Brian a little bit this morning, too. And they're, they're talking about, well, it's only happening because of injuries. Guys, I hate to disagree with you. A lot of this is happening because of injuries. I do agree with that. But these are the kind of matches that Tony Khan likes to put together anyway. My thought is, I'm like you, Vic, when Tanahashi, and there's a chance maybe Okada, because he appeared on TV. But yes, I'm looking forward to this Osprey, Danielson. Yes, injuries, Kyle's injured, et cetera, et cetera. I understand all that. But first of all, you can't show. To me, if I'm getting these guys like Jeff Cobb, who's never been on major, though he's been on the Ring of Honor here, but it's going to get him his first shot on a major on a big network for the first time. I want him in a single with somebody. I've seen this. I was going to use him on the in L.A. Back in 2012-13, but we'd gone through, the budget wasn't that I could bring him in. Tim Thatcher actually had Cobb send me a video showing, where, when I saw him, damn, where was this kid before? But Osprey, Tanahashi, Cobb, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I don't want to see them in five-man matches or six-man matches or mixed, any of that. I want to see them in because that's where they stand out. And he's not going to do that. Call him. I'll be honest with you. I'm not spending $50 this weekend. I said, nope. After I saw Orange Clown throwing big guys, two big guys at the same time around Wednesday night. That's all I needed. Hell, I don't need to buy this pay-per-view.
I feel like they've talked a few people probably out of this show with the way they've built it over the last few weeks. It's not an AEW pay-per-view or a television show for that matter without the obligatory mystery opponent. Although this weekend it's understandable with what's been going on with Bryan Danielson not being cleared to compete. Word on the street is it's either Claudio Castagnoli or Johnny Gargano. Of course, both of those could be wrong. Who knows? But if this person is actually a member of the Blackpool Combat Club and in the company moving forward, and you're looking at each member of the Blackpool Combat Club and their personal history with William Regal, well, obviously Gargano was in NXT, but if you're talking about what we've seen on television, Claudio Castagnoli is the only guy between the two of them who's actually been on television in a program with Regal and has wrestled him, and Mox obviously was in the ring in NXT. Regal was with Moxley, and Danielson was mentored by him for years. And it's kind of the reason he wears the shade of red that he does, is because it's the same outfit or same colors that Regal spent many years wearing. So if you're asking me whether or not it's important that this person has a connection to Regal, then it would seem to me that Castagnoli is the more logical choice than Gargano.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But yeah, it's, and I'm going to tell you, while we were watching Wednesday night, I said to my friend, I said, damn, I really love Bryan Danielson's personality since he's gotten there. I like the way he does, because he's playing with your head is what he's doing. But he's doing it sort of with tongue in cheek, right? And if you figure, hey, okay, I'm messing with you, right? Anyway, I like his personality at this point in time. But yes, all these guys are valuable, and I want to see them in individual matches. But again, and I realize you can't understand, you can't know that these injuries are all going to get piled up the way they have all at one time and create a problem. But they're, you know, by throwing five guys together or four tag teams, or that doesn't cure it, and it doesn't really get anybody over.
Well, you know what? Let's take a look at some of these matches that are happening at Forbidden Door this weekend with AEW. I think it's
okay.
Pretty simple for us to look at that IWGP US Championship match and say, no way. Even if you catch Gato at the end of a long night at the bar, is he going to say Orange Cassidy's winning the championship for my guy? So I think it's fair to say Will Ospreay retains.
And if he does win, then you know that Tony Khan has, or Gato has a price, and Tony Khan paid it, right?
That takes us to that Women's World Championship match. Toni Storm, fresh off her win over Marina Shafir this week on television, has the opportunity to become the AEW World's Women's Champion in this match against champ Thunder Rosa. I like Toni Storm. I think she's got future champ written all over her. I still maintain, as I did last month when Thunder Rosa faced off against Serena Deeblass, not the time to take the belt from her.
No, I don't think so either. That's you know, one of the things that made NXT so palatable and people like it so much initially was the fact that titles didn't change as frequently there. The same with ROH in its early existence. And I think if they would try to, you know, take that same stance here, they'll find that the fans in the long haul will appreciate it more. But yeah, I agree that Rosa maintains.
That brings us...
Retains.
Yes, to a match where multiple tag team titles are on the line. Both the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships and the IWGP Tag Team Championships are at stake here. United Empire, Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan, the IWGP Tag Champions, defending against FTR, the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, and Roppongi Vice, Trent Barretta and Rocky Romero, who had a very successful run in New Japan under that moniker and were at one point IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, a fact maybe that folks here in America would not want you to know, since you know how it is with juniors and heavyweights and the way it's perceived here in America. But the Roppongi Vice and FTR have got their teamwork and their thing down. United Empire is still a relatively new crew. And I just have this feeling that it's headed in a particular direction. And I have to be honest, it was Dave who pointed it out this week in the Observer. But when he said it, I thought, oh, there it is. The Young Bucks are once again AEW World Tag Team Champions. And I just have this feeling that where we're headed now is FTR with every single other tag team belt possibly in existence. Remember, they're still the AAA Tag Team Champions.
Right.
Hooking it up with the Bucks one more time, say Labor Day weekend, with all the gold on the line.
And the only way I'll watch is you guarantee me
that FTR wins?
Yes, yes.
But I do think FTR is going to win here and become the IWGP Tag Team Champions.
They should.
To that Ring of Honor belt.
If we're talking about professional wrestling, not professional cartoons or professional acrobats or professional clowns, then we're talking about FTR, plain and simple. And yes, that's my preference, and I realize what everybody else on this site thinks, or, well, not everybody else, the non-wrestling people for the most part. But, you know, that's where it belongs. You need to put some wrestling back in this damn business, and those guys are there to do that. And again, AEW right now has probably the best chance of showing good wrestling. Well, Dragon will be back soon. Kyle will be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they have got some tremendously talented guys. And I don't want to see just, you know, bumps and multi-man matches and everything. Please give us something that this business was built on.
The inaugural AEW All-Atlantic Championship match. The first champion will be crowned in this four-way, which apparently didn't settle well with Tomohiro Ishii, who had qualified for the match. And a day or two after his post-win press conference, where he talked about how four-ways were just not his thing, he doesn't get it, but I guess I'll be there and I'll show up, somehow suddenly has a knee injury. He's not going to be making it. No, I'm not saying those two are connected. I just think it's interesting that it worked out that way.
Go ahead and say it. Go ahead and say it. I'll say it. How's that? But, and good for him. He's one of my favorite guys already.
The man.
But you know what? How many? If more people, he came out publicly and he didn't trash it, but he basically said, "I'm not interested in this. Yeah. I don't see the value." You know what? You know how many guys are still taking bumps on a nightly basis in this business that feel the same way he does, but can't come out and say it or won't. That's a sad thing. And of course, that means when he speaks up, some fans, he's not with the program here or whatever, right? As you, believe me, I know guys who would trash most of what currently goes on that are in the business today and a lot younger than me, but they won't do it because publicly they don't want to be like me and poor and have to take a tin cup and go out on the street because they're telling the truth. Anyway.
Well, regardless of the reason, Ishii is not on the plane headed to America this weekend. The guy he beat for the opportunity to get into this four-way, Clark Connors, one of the young boys from the New Japan USA dojo, who's been quite impressive. I mean, every single person who comes out of these dojos, whether it's Japan or America, they've got their stuff together. So he's going to be in this match with Miro, Pac, and Malakai Black.
Yes. Yes, he is. And like I say, the worst thing about this is all the multi matches on this card.
Yeah.
And I would rather see, you know, some good singles. I would. And of course, we don't know who the mystery guy is yet.
Oh, but, well, Connors is going to be the guy filling in for Ishii. The mystery guy you're talking about between Zack Sabre and what was supposed to be Brian Danielson. Yeah. Well, right now, like I said, it was either Gargano or Castagnoli. That's the smart money. But honestly, the only person who probably knows is that person and Tony Khan.
I was actually hoping to see Sabre and Dragon.
Oh, man, that would have stole the show.
Yes, absolutely. Maybe that's why.
That's why they put it off.
Hey, Brian, we'll give you an extra grand to go out and pretend so you guys don't steal the show. No, I don't believe that. It's my facetious, sarcastic sense of humor, and that's all. I'm just trying to be light today. But I was really looking forward. Sabre and Dragon they tear it up, man. Would tear it up.
Now, in this All-Atlantic Championship match, you figure Connors, and I hate to cast aspersions on the young man, but is the most likely suspect to take the fall here since he's just been inserted into this match. You've got Malakai Black, Pac, and Miro, all worthy first All-Atlantic champions. I'm just looking at this and trying to think, you know, who needs the biggest boost? And given the way the House of Black has almost completely disappeared in the last couple of months, I think this would be a nice thing for Malakai Black to come out on top here somehow and become the first All-Atlantic champion.
Yeah, you know, and here, you know, as I've said to you before, I really was high on Black when I was at the Performance Center a couple years ago. And through that week, he was one of the highlights of my being there, right? How much he wanted and how good a wrestler he was. And we haven't had a chance to see him as you know, as a good wrestler. If you're going to throw Orange Cassidy in against a good wrestler, give Black a good wrestler and let him show you what the hell can go on that mat because he is good. But I don't think, you know, and maybe what's going on with him is what he wants, which is fine. It's just I don't think it's showcasing his wrestling talents at all.
Looking at some of the other big matches, there's only a couple left here as far as the real marquee matches for this Forbidden Door pay-per-view. Talked about Okada, who was on Dynamite this week, and obviously it was an all-hands-on-deck situation with the loss of Bryan Danielson. Okada, it was presumed, was not going to be on this show because his wife is pregnant, and it's her birthday this weekend. So I imagine there was a rather large envelope in his mailbox at some point in the last 7 days. Because not only was he on Dynamite this week, but he will be in a four-way for the IWGP Championship. Jay White, Okada, Adam Page, that is, and Adam Cole. I expect the champ to retain here, but you could put it back on Okada, who just lost it to Jay White in a singles match, I don't think even 2 weeks ago, if you wanted to go in a direction for New Japan, and I don't know what Gato's got planned. But if you wanted to go in that direction, you could have Okada win the title without pinning White. I'm never big on those sorts of things, but if you were looking to build to a rematch, you could do that. But I still am going to say that Jay White comes out on top in this one.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think White, and again, that's one thing that New Japan doesn't switch their titles every week. So I'd say that White's pretty secure in walking away with the strap at this one. Now, that is one match that I would like to see, because those four guys together is, I think, to me, so, well, and again, we don't know who Moxley's going to, you know, or who's going to be the mystery guy, but this is the match of this pay-per-view, and again, I'd like to see it, but I'm not going to pay $50 to watch the rest of it. I think that will be actually the highlight, because all four of those guys can work, and I think that'll be the standout match of this particular pay-per-view.
Now that brings us to the main event for the interim AEW World Championship. Winner presumably faces CM Punk, but I imagine they'll have a title defense or two between now and then. Jon Moxley versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. Going to be a fantastic match any way you slice it. I maintain to you, Les, I wish that Tony keeps the checkbook open and keeps and figures out how to get Tanahashi here for a while and give him the opportunity to get over on television on a more regular basis, working the kinds of matches he's capable of working, even in his mid-40s with two bad knees. Nobody's smarter than this guy. And, you know, we have at length previously discussed, because he does a podcast and a lot of that stuff ends up being transcribed, talked about his personal wrestling philosophy, and he's right up the alley of the best of the guys from the territories, and he's making it work in 2022 amongst a bunch of guys who don't necessarily subscribe to those theories and approaches. And I imagine he's going
to make them work, honestly.
That's right. And he's capable of putting one together with Jon Moxley for sure. I expect it's going to be Moxley, and I'm predicting Moxley, but I'm hoping that they figured out a way to keep Tanahashi here at least through Labor Day, if not the rest of the year, for goodness sakes. Now, since I'm out here hoping, I might as well, you know, swing for the fences. And we see that Tanahashi Punk match title for title sooner rather than later. But I am going to officially predict Jon Moxley for this.
Yeah, I think so. And yes, I forgot about that. That's another match that I wouldn't mind seeing. But the rest is just there. And again, I am perturbed, I guess, is the word about the orange versus Will. I don't give a damn. You can't come up with a logical reason for that match to happen, because if Cassidy's going to come out and kick ankles and go through that, I'm really not interested in the least. So anyway, I'm sure the pay-per-view is going to do well. I mean, never mind that I'm not going to watch it, but it started out, like you said, you know, man, when is it? Next week? No, it's okay, man, I can't wait. And now I'm going to wait and I'll read the results and, you know, hope to see these guys in better light at another time.
I got to be honest with you. I am kind of questioning what the buy rate for this show is going to be. I mean, every AEW pay-per-view has done better than the previous one the year before. Obviously, there's no benchmark to put this one against, because there's never been one in June, nor one with New Japan for AEW being just a few years old. But you've seen and have been able to make the case at every pay-per-view for growth in some shape, form, or fashion. And I'm just curious, although I do think these top matches are going to be really, really good, whether or not what we've seen on TV the last 3 or 4 weeks is going to dissuade people from buying the show. I think that I am actually at this point most interested in what that final pay-per-view buy rate ends up being, because I'm skeptical that it's going to do some bigger business or as big a business as the traditional pay-per-views they've been doing over the last couple of years.
I wouldn't disagree with you. I would not. I'm thinking this one, it should do well, simply for no other reason than a lot of casual fans have never had a chance to see Osprey or Tanahashi or Okada, et cetera. So they're interested in seeing them in any light, which me, having seen them at their best, I'm not interested in seeing them, you know, in any other way. And, you know, it just, or history for that, you know, for that matter too. I'm not interested in seeing him in this gimmick match. I don't know if it'll set a record or whatever, but I think just the fact that the New Japan talent and, is going to help, you know, make this a successful pay-per-view. It's just a matter of how there's talent there. I love to watch talent. I would enjoy watching this Sunday, but I'm not going to because they're not in situations which is, you know, going to make them showcased in the way I know they can be.
Now I have this image of you, Les, sitting at home in front of the television with your DVD player, watching all the great Brian Pillman shows that are on that DVD while you're wearing your Briscoe Booster t-shirt. Is that what's going to be happening this weekend?
No, I don't think so. You know, you mentioned Briscoe. Gerald and JBL are getting some people saying they need to get me on the show. And Gerald has told them that we're working toward doing that. And we really are on doing the JBL and Briscoe show. But that's going to be a lot of fun when we get around to doing it, that is. I don't know Tony Khan, and like I say, everything that everybody tells me comes across as just really a nice guy, and he means well, and he wants to do well. But I just, you know, he's got some of the best talent in the world, and I just think a lot of it's being abused, and I shouldn't say abused or misused. That would be my stance. But I'm not going to hold a. I won't sit in front of my TV with it turned off. With a protest sign up. I promise you I won't do that.
Okay. But if anyone else wants to sit in front of their TV this weekend watching a Brian Pillman DVD wearing their Briscoe Booster t-shirt, how could they do that?
I'm glad you asked that. First, I want to tell them how, if they actually are interested in learning something about professional wrestling, they might want to book me for a seminar or a weekend training camp. And if they did, they could reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com, and I'd be more than happy to send them out that information. And if they'd like to have a Briscoe Booster t-shirt, they can go to Pro Wrestling Tees and get one because it happened to be the very first ever pro wrestling t-shirt on the market, put out in 1972 by Jack, Jerry, and myself, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And at Pro Wrestling Tees, you can also get I'm a Les Thatcher guy if you're interested or if you happen to be one, a Les Thatcher guy, that is. And Wrestling from the Heartland is available to you. That's volumes 1 and 2. They're all both 6 hours of content, matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. Joe does more of the play-by-play, and I, you know, give the stories from behind the scenes and some of the insights on the talent that you'll see on there. You can buy those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And they mentioned the Brian Pillman Show's anthology, the 20th anniversary. It's a 4-DVD set, 16 hours of content, or 15, excuse me. I don't want to mis-advertise. And all four of those great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, auction footage, awards, and extras. And Joe and I do the voiceovers on there as well. You can get those at PillmanShows.com or at the Joe-Dombrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com as well. Saturday, July 9th, that's coming up pretty soon. I'll be in Sevierville, Tennessee at the Sevierville Civic Center for Heroes and Legends number 17. That will be a one-day fan fest and matches that night. The fan fest will run from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. on that Saturday. And I'll be at the Developmentally Speaking podcast booth to do autographs, pictures, signings, and so forth, and to talk wrestling if you're interested. So come by and see us. I'm looking forward to seeing the fans and chatting with them, as well as some of my old buddies from the good old days. And of course, if you're interested, I'm sitting right now at Mountain Barn Builders here in Rocky Top, Tennessee. We're at 313 North Main Street. And if you need a storage building, a carport, a playhouse for your kids, a chicken coop, or a doghouse, stop in and check us out. Or if you're just traveling and through, get off I-75 here in Tennessee at exit 128 and come by and stop and chat. Be happy to see you. If you'd like to check us out, give me a call at 865-207-8457. And I guess that about covers it for us today. And listen, if I put the damper on the pay-per-view, I didn't mean to do that. For anybody who's excited to see it, I was excited, but it's just the way this thing is put together. It's not going to be my cup of tea. So enjoy it if you're going to watch it, and I hope it turns out to be 10 times better than I expect.
And with that, we are going to put a cap on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. That, of course, the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we look forward to getting back with you again next week.